So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this
And welcome to This Week in Wrestling Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, how's it going, my friend?
Oh, it's going fantastic. Just went to a couple wrestling shows the past couple nights. Had a good time on those. I know you've been to a couple wrestling shows recently. So, yeah, I think we're both getting into the swing of things for 2018. Trying to go to as much live wrestling as we can, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure. Why don't we run down what you went to first?
All right. So I think I'll start with last night. I'll go reverse chronological order just because of maybe just kind of the themes of it. I'd rather end on the high note. So last night I went to PCW Ultra, they're calling themselves now, 2K18. It was their second anniversary show. And I would say the best match on the show from just purely in-ring was the opener with ACH versus Rey Fénix. ACH was looking really good here. He busted out that flipping up kick that he does to an opponent who's usually standing on the middle rope. He hasn't done that in a while.
I was wondering how he looked for you because he has some broken ribs.
He looked fantastic for a guy with broken ribs. I did not know that that was the case for him, so I'm really impressed. Busted out a good match, looked good with Fénix. Fénix hit him with some, it was like a setup to a muscle buster turned into a Michinoku driver. I don't think that's a move that you're taking with, you know, busted up ribs. So that's pretty impressive that he would do that. Yeah, it was really solid. I thought he looked good, hit all of his spots, no problems there. So he looked good. He looked good for sure. Otherwise, you know, the next match was Mariachi Loco versus Kikutaro. Solid comedy match, but nothing too great. Next match was supposed to be a four-way, but AR Fox didn't show up. Shane Strickland versus Brody King versus Flip Gordon. Supposed to have AR Fox. No AR Fox. Kind of a bummer because my wife went specifically to see AR Fox. She's a big AR Fox fan, and she did not get to see him, so that was a... That was a bummer for her, but they looked good. Brody King, I'd say hottest young prospect coming out of Southern California right now. Getting bookings in Defy, MLW. Got at least one booking in Wrestle Circus. We'll see how it goes from there. Hopefully he starts showing up in other places. Maybe AAW is a good spot for him. Definitely looking good. Big size. I saw him two nights in a row. I thought he did fantastic both nights. Playing similar character, but slightly different. I think in this, he's more serious. He's got a manager. He's part of the big-time heel stable, so he's playing pretty nasty heel straight across. Bar wrestling, he's a little bit more fun. He's in a slightly comedy-ish. He was being the heavy in a comedy trios match in bar wrestling, so different roles, but similar. Good stuff, nothing great. Coming after that, we got Hammerstone versus Brian Cage. This is where the quality of the show took a major dip and then kind of stayed that way for the rest of the night for me personally. This match was bland, boring. It's supposed to be a rematch. I didn't feel any heat or anything coming off of it as if these guys really had an issue with each other or there was any background to it. They're just basically just kind of boring, mundane bullshit. Brian Cage, or Hammerstone, gets picked on by the crowd for looking like Triple H. He buys into it and finishes Brian Cage off with Triple H's kind of signature spots. So just completely getting, you know, caught up in buying into the smart fan bullshit. Under 8 minutes, not even 10-minute match here. Next, Douglas James versus Gansiki Tanaka. He is Great Muta's young boy from Wrestle 1. Pretty sure that's why he's here. This guy's strike exchanges were downright business exposingly bad. Both young rookies. Douglas James, I've seen have much better showings in this match. He was definitely the more solid striker, but I mean, even saying that, it was not very good. And it's not like you have to throw strikes. It's just don't do them. If they look bad, just cut them. but they kept going to him, which is funny because all of these terrible strikes and Tanaka gets busted open and bleeds out of the mouth mid-match, even though the strikes look like shit. So, you know, that's kind of the worst of both worlds there, having terrible strikes and you're getting busted open. So not very good stuff there. From there, there's a tag team match built pretty much all around kind of Plunder, Joey Janela versus Joey Janela and Jimmy Jacobs versus the Jacob Fatu and the Almighty Sheik. Fine stuff here, definitely. Lots of crowd brawling, tables, ladders, chairs. Exactly what you'd expect. Blood really serves its purpose well for what it is. And I think card positioning, probably not the best thing to do. Have this match, tag team match for the titles, all the blood and the gimmicks, followed by the main event tag team match. Johnny Impact, Johnny Ultra, Johnny Lucha, Johnny whatever you're calling him, and Sami Callihan versus Penta El Zero MA and the Great Muta. Muta is old. I mean, there's no getting around it. He did one kind of snapping elbow drop and his mask falls off. He stands on the apron, stiff as a board, can barely walk around for most of the match. I thought it was an interesting choice to put Penta as his tag team partner because you would think you want his tag team partner to be able to kind of carry the brunt of the work for the match. But realistically, I mean, Penta can, but he's not going to. But this was all gaga. I mean, this is all character. It's over. The crowd's into it. They're reacting big. They love it. But for me, not a lot of great stuff in ring. Definitely worth watching, worth going to for the spectacle. But the reason why I wanted to talk about this first is because this show had what I will say was the most insufferable, snarky, smart fan that I've ever fucking seen or dealt with at a wrestling show in my life, sitting directly in front of me. The rest of the crowd is amazing. They pop for everything. They're super invested. This one fucking guy was just terrible, had to just be loud and obnoxious, talking to his friends about how smart he is about wrestling, about how he at one point said that Will Ospreay is everything that he hates about wrestling, and that the only reason why anyone cares about Will Ospreay is because he's British, and if he wasn't British, no one would even know who he was, which even for me, who's not a big-time Will Ospreay fan, I have to say that that's complete fucking bullshit, because Will Ospreay is like one of the most talented flyers on the planet. It doesn't have anything to do with him being British. It wasn't like he was super big and popular. It wasn't like the British scene was super big and popular before Will Ospreay came around. He actually helped pop the territory. So to say that that's the reason why people fucking care about him is ridiculous. So then what was funny is, partway through it, I thought to myself, I think that this might be Brandon Stroud from Up Rocks, because of the people he was there with that I knew. I turned around and looked it up this morning, and it was the most annoying smart fan that I've ever seen in my life, Brandon Stroud from Up Rocks with Spandex. Just really would not shut up, trying to make himself seem like he was above wrestling. I was at times tempted to just ask him why he was even at the show, if he didn't care about watching the show, if he cared more about just shitting on everything, that there was no point in him being there, trying to ruin the fun for everyone else. So yeah, don't be that guy at wrestling shows, everyone. Just try to enjoy it.
He used to go to a lot of indie shows here in Texas, and he was a real douche.
Yeah, it's just try to enjoy the wrestling, please. That's what we're all here for. I mean, I think that me and you, Pete, we watch a lot of wrestling. We know a lot about wrestling. We can fucking see the stuff. We can tell that the punches don't look good, or it's very obvious that a guy blades, but it doesn't make you look cool to point that out to everybody around you, guys. It just makes you look like an even bigger loser because you're the one who decided to go to the wrestling show and not even enjoy yourself. You know what I mean?
I never would ever do that at a wrestling show. It's just disgusting. I mean, it might be if I'm sitting with a close friend who I know knows the business, we might whisper to one another.
Yeah.
But I would never make a big point out of it. Like, some people, I've been at shows where they make big grand gestures of being in the know, and all you do is look like a fucking tool.
Yep. So, yeah. So that was, you know, it was a good show for what it is. It definitely works to the crowd. Who's there. The crowd is fucking hot. The crowd is drunk. The building is nice. It's air conditioned. It's a really great place to see wrestling. Everything feels like a step off, I would say. Everyone works a little bit lighter. I can't blame them, honestly. They don't let these guys sell their own shirts there. They, you know, the crowd is hot for little minimal amount of action, so you don't have to go over the top. It's really, honestly, old school wrestling. You got Kevin Sullivan as part of the booking team, so you're going for that basic heat, kind of gaga type wrestling, and it works. I mean, this is a big crowd here. The place is packed. They're selling out. They're doing super well. And, you know, you don't have to kill yourself. You got guys like Joey Janela is the only one taking ladder bumps. Everyone else is taking it pretty easy. So I cannot blame that.
And that's Sullivan's MO, is to have the workers work underneath and the gimmicks on top.
Yeah, and that's what it is. I'd say my only issue is that, you know, like the top two matches were really, or top two, yeah, matches were really samey in that they were kind of crowd brawling, weapons, gaga, and their tag matches. But other than that, definitely really solid show. But the night before, I went to Bar Wrestling, Happily Ever After. There's, you know, not really too much that I need to get super into with it realistically. Other than, you know, I got to see the Carnies live, super fun, really great to finally meet those guys and see them wrestle live and in person. Really good stuff.
They're a really fun live act, aren't they?
Yeah, and here they're against B-Boy and Willie Mack and PP Ray, Pretty Peter Avalon and Ray Rosas. So they were playing the bases a lot. They were taking a lot of offense. They're selling, but they're getting in their spots. They're having a lot of personality. They're not doing, because I know these guys have a lot of spots. We've seen it. They got a bunch of tag team moves. They got a bunch of cool stuff that they can do, but they kept it real minimal. They played their role super well, and they really got over with the crowd. The big thing they did, they hit the Force Destroyer. Of course, some people hate it, but this crowd, it's the perfect crowd for it. They love it. They're super into it, and they're just going crazy for the whole thing. So that was good. Jeff Cobb versus Luchasaurus. This was fought like a just like a big time movie monster match. Great stuff there. Scorpio Sky looked good breaking the lamps and the chandeliers in the first opening match against Bryant Cage. We both know Scorpio Sky is great. There's the Trios match, Team Tremendous, Taya Valkyrie, Killer Bays, and Brody King. This is where I said Brody King did a really good job being in kind of a comedy match, playing the heavy. Intergender tag team match with Delilah Doom, Eli Everfly versus Joey Janela and Penny Ford. The personalities of Janelope, I think, is fucking phenomenal together. You got Penelope Ford plays like kind of the Stone Cold Assassin character. She's really demure. She doesn't show a lot of emotion. And then meanwhile, you got Joey, who's just this wild, crazy, just psychopath. And then they kind of come together to be almost like natural born killers, like the movie, sort of like the way that they feed off of each other in this perverse couple that just loves to do disgusting, violent acts to people. It's kind of amazing. I really love their charisma in that regard. Billy Gunn versus Dolph Ziggler Jr., Hot Young Briley, Dolph Ziggler's little brother. This is just, I mean, Billy Gunn did jack shit. It was amazing how he milked this crowd. They were going nuts for him, shouting "suck it" every few seconds, bunch of jokes. I mean, I've never been a Billy Gunn fan. I will put that out there completely. I never thought that he was very good in either, even in tag team settings. I did like the Smoking Guns for like a second when I was a child, but realistically never been a fan. But he just came across super likable. He understood why he was there. He looked good. You know, obviously he's got a little bit of help in that regard. But he looked good. He played his part. He was funny. He didn't take himself seriously. He just did what he needed to do. But this show was all about the main event, Joey Ryan versus Candice LeRae. This was very emotional for me and for everyone in the crowd. Candice has got her nieces doing the special ring introduction. She ends up beating Joey Ryan after a really great match with cool callbacks and fun stuff here. You know, big speech afterwards by Joey, heartfelt stuff, and sending her off. And I mean, Candice is, she's got to be the legend of female wrestling in Southern California. She's honestly a Southern California independent wrestling legend. I mean, she's been around forever. She's been a backbone of the scene forever. It's a big deal seeing her go. So it was very, very emotional, kind of tough to even deal with at times, honestly, holding back tears, watching the whole thing. It was a lot of fun. Building is packed. The most packed it's ever been. First time I ever went. So obviously it was drawing a special crowd there. No seats. Hot as fuck. No air conditioning. cramped, nasty building. Complete opposite of PCW, honestly. But if I was going to pick the show that I enjoyed more, I'm going to take actually the one that was a little bit less comfortable just because it had better wrestling and a better environment, honestly. So, yeah, that was kind of my breakdown. I kind of saw both ends of the spectrum here in the SoCal wrestling scene in the past 2 days.
Yeah, I went to see Inspire Pro, and they put on a solid show. I'd probably ache into it as like a combination of the freelance and the PWX show we saw today. That we're going to talk about later on, which I didn't think either one of them were blowaway shows by any stretch of the imagination, but they were good, solid wrestling shows, and that's kind of where I felt like Inspire was, where there's some stuff that was good on the show, some stuff that really wasn't. They opened up with a cage match, and if you're going to do a cage match on an indie show, you should start with it or end with it, and I always say start with it so you can spend the time and put the cage together right. Well, they had problems and started falling apart. All indies pretty much have a reputation of doing cage matches pretty poorly. I love it because they just don't have the experience of building a cage match cage for it. It seems easy, but it turns into disaster. And these guys are working hard early, and they do a couple cage spots, and I'm like, all right. And then they go to another cage spot, and the cage starts falling apart. And at that point, they kind of start blowing a couple spots, got a little sloppy here and there. And I don't really blame them. And then they had to kind of work, kind of call the match on the fly and work around on the fly because, you know, if your cage is going to fall apart every time you do a spot into it, it's a danger and stuff. And there was, like, one spot these guys were fighting near the top of the cage, and I'm like, no way in hell would I be doing that, knowing that the cage next to it had already crumbled and stuff. They had a solid enough match, but it could have been so much better if the cage would have been able to withstand the punishment. Then we got like this Battle Royal, Battle Royals, that's one thing that are always more fun live than they are on television. And here I thought this was a total blast. It was one of my favorite matches of the night because everyone had their working shoes on. They were telling a story. They had some great near eliminations, some good storytelling there. And it was a good one to engage the crowd. Speaking of the crowd, they didn't seem really hot tonight. And I don't know, maybe because they were all up watching football, drinking beer all afternoon, and they were just burnt out from watching some really good football games of that day and then going to the show. I'm not quite sure. Then we got another good match, which was MGF. MJF, he defeated Cody Lane, and I thought this was the best match of the night. I thought it was like in the 3.5-star range. MGF worked on Cody's arm, and Cody Lane did a fantastic job selling it. Cody Lane's a guy who's really improved in the last year or two. Gotten a lot better. He's a guy. I don't know if you could push him to high because he doesn't have a great look, but he's understanding his psychology is getting better. He's getting better in the ring. He blew one spot. It looks like he wanted to go right back to it, but MGF, thank God, took control. Like, we're not fucking going right back to that fucking spot, and took control like a pro should. You know, it's something I've always wondered. What if I'm teaching students, the first thing I would ever say is don't, if you blow a spot, don't go right back to it. It's almost like, to me as a fan, it's like a no brainer that you don't go right back to the spot, to the blown spot. You come back to it later on, where it's at least fresh. Then we got the Heavy Hearts versus Delilah Doom and Thunder Rosa. Yeah, it was okay. It just went a little too long. It worked early on, but then it kind of dragged on. It kind of lost its luster for me. Then we got Terrell Tempo with the returning Ricky Starks. And I really liked aspects of this match. I thought Starks' selling was way incredible because I actually thought he legit hurt himself by the way he was selling. I just felt that maybe he was overselling over the top because, it looked like he had broke his ass or broke his rib cage because the way he was selling it, and he became so unmobile and was taking bumps so weird that he was doing like an injury angle, but it just, I don't think he really was. And it, I never understand the point of that unless there's a long-term story to it. And I just don't see it being a story. Then we got Jay Sirius or Matthew Palmer, who was Ember Moon's husband. Matthew Palmer wore King of the Black Women shirts. I got a kick out of it, seeing it was the day before Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. So he's trying to be a little over the top. And then they had an okay match. I think I enjoyed it more because of Palmer's promo beforehand. Then we got Steve Areno versus Gino, and Areno looked good. I thought Gino looked much better as a heel than he does on a face in reality of wrestling. And they had a good, solid match, but again, nothing really blown away. And then the semi-main was supposed to be Andy Dalton versus Masada. Masada double-booked. He booked a show earlier that day in Texas, and he does show up later on, but he never shows up on the card itself, but he shows up late. So he ended up having to rebook this into a handicap match. And, you know, it was just on the fly booking. I can't really, I thought Andy Dalton was great here. And I enjoyed the new movement. I especially like T-Ray. I think the guy has potential. But again, it fell flat. And then ACH and Strickland had a match, which it really didn't do anything for me, but it comes out that ACH had broken ribs, but he's really proud of himself after post-match that the two black men could headline a show the day before Martin Luther King's birthday. So, I mean, if you're into all that nostalgia stuff, that's cool. It didn't do anything for me. The match itself, I felt flat. Then he had kind of like, it was a babyface match, and the crowd was dead, and the crowd was dead for the match, so it kind of missed the boat for me. It like peaked early in the show with the best match, and they never really got close to doing it. There were some really good performances up and throughout the show from Cody Lane and MGF, and I thought Ricky Stark's selling was really well done. But it just didn't translate into a killer show. I've seen him put on better ones. And I think what hurt him, honestly, I mean, we've both been high on Rex Andrews and him not having being on the card. He's a guy who's just, he's been putting on three and a half star matches. I think he's had three Inspire Pro show matches. And I think two of them were above three stars and one was right underneath. And I think it was because of the booking of a particular finish. So not having him there, I thought kind of hurt it. But they announced Joey Janela coming in March. So the Bad Boy is coming. So that'd be cool. He's always fun to watch live. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed myself, but it felt the crowd just felt a little dead and stuff like that. So, you know, I think your show sounded better, tell you the truth, Timothy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's two shows, but yeah, and I remarked to you online that the crowd didn't look as big, didn't come across as big on tape as it was there in the building, obviously, and I think that's part of it. The crowd was not super into anything, it didn't seem, and the camera angles weren't great. I did like the opening cage match, but I thought that, again, I mean, I agree with you that if you're going to do an indie show, you should probably do it to open, but unfortunately, I think it really fucks up the flow of the show.
Yeah.
And it really just kind of messes with everything, but it's like it's like kind of the best or the worst of both evils or whatever. But the match itself was good, except for the cage breaking. From the stuff that I picked up, I didn't watch this super intently, unfortunately, just because of the time of day and everything that was going on. I thought Terrell Temple, Ricky Starks was great. It made me forget just how good Ricky Starks was, or I had forgot. It made me remember just how good Ricky Starks was in Inspire Pro before he lost the title and went on to kind of do the extra talented, more full time here. I thought he did a great job.
He really had a great babyface run in Inspire that he kind of gets overshadowed now by his extra talented run. And because of, again, Keith Lee and Sammy Guevara kind of taking the Inspire, taking a bigger piece of the pie of the Inspire, look at us type of thing, you know?
Yeah, and it was probably smart that he kind of, after that long title run, he disappeared for a while pretty much and wasn't really being the same character, because he wouldn't have meant as much and he would have just felt like an also-and for a while. But now coming back, I thought that this was a really good match with Tempo. I thought that the Jay Sirius and Matthew Palmer match was fine, not great. I agreed with you. I thought that Steve O'Reno looked fantastic with Gino, especially because me and you both were not big Gino fans. But I thought he looked good here and showed some heat as a heel, which was nice. I really unfortunately missed the Andy Dalton match, so I wish I had watched that. I would go back and watch that if I got the chance. And then I caught like maybe halfway or a quarter into ACH and Strickland. So I can't say for sure how I felt about the match as a whole, but I liked what I saw, just the action. But it wasn't up to the standards that you might expect from these two. And it did kind of feel like, I can't believe that ACH would phone it in Texas like this, because it's kind of, he's the king of Texas. But hearing that he was injured does make sense. But, you know, he turns around and like a week later, I thought that he really kind of killed it in PCW. So I don't know how bad the injury really is or what the deal is with that, because that's kind of crazy to think that he has broken ribs and he had the match that I saw him have with Phoenix, because, I mean, he was hitting everything.
He had tape everywhere on that show. He had him on his ribs, had it on his shoulders, and he was the one who mentioned that he broke his ribs. He had a pair of broken ribs.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm really not sure what's going on there, because...
Now, on the Twitch angle, Starks took his bump all the way on the opposite side of the ring from me. Did the Twitch catch that at all?
I did not really see it.
Where he comes back and starts selling it huge.
Yeah, I didn't really see it super well on the Twitch, honestly. But okay. I did see him start selling, and I assumed it must have been pretty bad, but I didn't really see it too well.
It sounded like a bad bump, but I didn't see the bump because it was completely on the opposite side from me, you know?
Yeah. Okay, huh. I wonder, I mean, I assume it was probably pretty good, but you gotta also assume that them doing, live, that it's kind of tough to always get the perfect angles, but
oh yeah, of course.
And it played into the match really well, I thought, so you know.
Yep. All right, man. Why don't we move in, and we have a lot to talk about today. We have last night of CWF Battlecade, and we'll probably talk about what CWF going forward, because Battlecade also coincided with Grant Sawyer's last day with the company. Then we have PWX Night 1, and then we have the Freelancer streamed on Powerbomb. And then, of course, we have some NXT. Reality of Wrestling took a breather because we're just a recap show from the year. But let's start off with Battlecade. And it opens up with Eric Royal and Adler. What'd you make of it, man?
I get, and I like that Stutzy talked about it, the reason why you put the TV title with the world title like this, because of the time, you know, the time frame stuff. Royal's bully work is just too fucking great. Like, he's just, I mean, he's shitting on everyone in the crowd. He's killing Adler. Adler selling the knee, I thought, was really, really well done. Royal stays all over him. Coach is kind of in and out helping Royal to win the match. And I thought the heat was really good here. I thought that the work from Royal was fantastic. I actually bought into Adler here as a top-level guy and not just a, like, not like top-level, but like a, not a rookie anymore, but like a guy who belonged in the mix with Royal here really well. The comebacks from him were good. Like I said, the selling was really good. Having him hit everything, even that standing shooting star, and Royal just still keeps coming and ends up winning the match, I thought was great. I really enjoyed this, honestly, and it might actually have been my favorite match on the show. It's like kind of a toss-up between this and the Brad Attitude and the Chet Sterling match for my matches of the Battlecade, honestly. This was really, really well worked. I think the only thing that hurts it is just, I guess, because it's kind of quick, because it's a TV title. Inherently, it has a shorter time limit, but I thought both guys played their roles super well here.
Yeah, well, what did you give it a star rating?
Oh, I give it 3.75 as well. That's why I'm kind of like in that toss-up. Hard to say which one I thought was better.
I'm with you on it. I gave it 3.25, and it felt like this thing could have easily hit 4 stars if they got like another 5 or 6 minutes. Because it felt like they had a little bit more. It felt like they had more story to tell. You know, a little bit more time to give me. But that's part of the TV title gimmick, is you get 10 minutes, and so there we go. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I mean, I think Eric Rowe is the most versatile worker in the whole kind of company they have. I mean, the guy has great psychology. He can play face. He's a great heel. He never works in the bubble. Always working, you know, outside the bubble. Great promo. He has this super presence about him. You just look at him, and you're like, you know he's up to no good. You know, he has some, like, you just, even looking, he has, like, a gleam in his eye that says deviousness and stuff, you know?
I mean, my dream match right now in 2018 has to be heel Eric Royal versus babyface Speedball, because I think they're, like, the two most well-rounded wrestlers on the planet right now, and when it just comes to in-ring, especially for Speedball, but for Eric Royal, everything. I mean, the guy is just amazing.
Yeah, he's the guy, probably the best worker that, only the hardcores really know about. I mean, he's that fucking good. Then we get to the main event. This is Lee versus Wilkins, first blood, no DQ. I ran the gauntlet on this, Tim. I mean, I went all over the board on this thing. From I think I loved it at one point to I fucking hated it at another point. There, so much. To love. I think I settled in on 3.5 stars, honestly. Because, all right, when it first broke out, I was hearing some of the Twitter, and I think it was Sophia Moon who I met over at FanCon. She's really super smart, and she really has a really good insight into that company, and by being there weekly a lot of times, and being there a lot, and watching it, and she felt like the finish was almost like end of the territory bad type of thing. You hear these type of finishes for territories that killed the territory dead. And she felt almost how that felt. And, you know, for a while there, I felt the same way. I'm like, this finish was everything you hear about of a killing a town. And you go right to the finish, and in the commentary, they talk about the loser has to have the blood must be flowing. It can't just be a nick, can't just be a little cut. The blood has got to be flowing. I don't think they meant that, for starters. One, two, I don't give a shit if it's a blade job or what have you, or if it's real blood or what have you. But that man either bit a condom, or that was a blood capsule. That was not a, because that comes straight out of his mouth. And it was a little over the top, a little like you roll your eyes at it, because it wasn't free flowing blood. Then they go into this super hot angle where they're strangling Trevor. I mean, this is like everything you read about on a Killing of the Territory, where you throw, it's like the magic trick where you misdirect, it's the common misdirection. I'm trying to pickpocket you, so I'm trying to make you look over here. It was very similar to like how the Lawler Idol Rich feud, where Lawler's supposed to lose his hair, but they run this super hot angle when they really destroy Lawler, but they never really shaved his head all the way, and so that was they consider that killing the town. Another one was in like Smoky Mountain, the town was never the same, it was Ricky Morton's hair versus Tammy Stitch's hair, the future Sunny, and they didn't shave her hair. They ended up shaving Candido's hair. You know, these stips where you don't honor them, and it really hurts the business. And they try to trick the chicanery here. So on that aspect, it bothered me. The finish bothered me. I'm going to tell you right off the bat. If you can't book a first blood match, don't book it. Should have known you could have gone with 8 million other choices. I felt that was bad. I'm going to now backtrack into the beginning. I really like that new belt. I think it looks really classy. and it's good to get the Southern flag off it. By Southern flag, I mean the Confederate flag off the belt in 2017. I don't find it offensive, but I can totally understand where people do find it offensive. I felt the match had a big feel to it. But then this turns almost into Trevor Lee is Stone Cold Steve Austin, and the All-Stars are Vince McMahon and the Stooges. But the difference is Coach and the All-Stars don't have the power Vince McMahon does. And then we're watching Trevor get quadruple teamed throughout this fucking match. And it's a great story, but no one's coming out to save him. Commentary never mentions why no one's coming out to save him. I can at least buy it that no one's coming out to save him because, you know what? He's been an asshole ever since he beat Nick Richards. He's kind of been a subtle heel. So I can understand why the faces don't want to come out and save him. He let Brad Attitude. He didn't come save Chet Sterling when Attitude laid his ass out. But just on Ultimate Survivor, Trevor has a full team of babyfaces with him, so he's still a babyface. The company views him as a babyface. The audience views him as a babyface. I view him as an egotistical asshole who's coming across the streams, becoming too confident, he's almost becoming like Apollo Creed level type of heel, as opposed to this confident babyface who overcome the odds. Now he's has a little cocky streak to him. So I can understand that, but they never played that beat in the narrative of why no one's coming out to save Trevor. So I felt that was a total botching of the story. Crowd was clearly behind Trevor. I thought Eric Royal, I thought Wilkins worked his ass off. I thought Eric Royal worked harder than was the hardest worker and actually carried a lot of the action in this match. That Royal was incredible here. The MVP should an outside source. I mean, could somebody who's on the outside be the best worker in the ring in the match? I don't know. I just don't know. So this whole big epic grand thing, what they're going for, I think they missed overall. There's still a lot to like. I mean, for Christ's sakes, it was action-packed, a lot of action, a lot of drama, a lot of great moments, but I think in the grand picture, I think they were like, it was like the Emperor had no clothes here in a way, where this was kind of like Trevor thinking he was having this grand masterpiece, but he's forgetting. He's forgetting what made him great, and he's supposed to be the big number one guy, the big baby face, and if he's such a great baby face, why isn't anyone else helping to save him? I just don't understand that. In the big 90-minute match with Wilkins, and they had interference spots. There was baby faces and heels both came out to interfere. And the heels came out first. The baby faces would run them off as part of the story. So what changed? And if it did change, that's just terrible. That the commentary never mentioned it. So I mean, that to me is a story point, which is un-CWF like, where usually everything makes sense. So that's why that's why we're big on the commentary. It's because they make sense. And here it didn't. And then they had that crappy old finish, which is kind of funny since you mentioned they don't like to use real blood. We were told they do use blood. And then we get this finish. I just think it was ironic at the time. I don't care. It's just like how you present it. But it just felt there were so many great moments and opportunities here. And they told a great story, but I just don't think the story, I don't think this is the right book, the right story for this match. I think they missed their mark, and And that's why I thought like last year's Battlecade was better, because the story that him and Brad Attitude told, that matched the story they were telling for outside the ring. Here, I'm utterly confused. I don't know where you go with Trevor from here. And then they do the big sympathy angle where they leave him laying, choking. Big Southern, you know, choked his ass out. Big beat down. The All-Stars leave in a limo. Where does that leave? Where does that leave Trevor Lee? What's Trevor Lee's next step? Does he grab a group to go fight the All-Stars? Well, no one helped him, so he should be on his own. Does he become that lone wolf like Sting in WCW? I don't know. It just felt after the Rumble, I understood the Rumble thing was to put a stack the deck against him, but then they come back and they reshuffle and stack the deck again, but with not as many obstacles here that he overcomes because of the Rumble. He overcame everything here. It just stunk, felt really bullshit to me. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I went 3.25 on this. Everything you said is pretty much exactly the same way I feel about a lot of it.
And you know what? I mean, you know, Tim, it's funny because, I mean, at one point I think I had this at 4.25.
Yeah.
And at another point I had it as a dud also because I felt it it missed the mark on the whole entire booking of the match. I thought it was just horrible.
Yeah, the booking of the match hurt it. I felt there was no continuity. I talked about it when I mentioned the blood stuff. I don't fucking care at this point about it. We both don't really care about it. But, like, why you didn't have to pick this stip, like you said, and it wasn't worked to this stipulation at all. I mean, the continuity made no sense to me because it felt like they're constantly going for chokes and different strangleholds. And then the post-match with the ropes and the strangling again, and I don't know what that leads to. That's why I say that there's no continuity, because I don't get what I'm supposed to get out of that. I don't think you can have like a rope hanging match or something weird like that. Like, where do you? I don't understand what any of this is meant to set up, honestly.
I mean, I don't mind. I don't mind the angle. It should lead to a heated grudge match, like no DQ or no, you know, whatever. But I mean, they just had a no DQ match, so I don't know how more heated they can done. Again, they did that angle to cause distraction on what a shit finish it was, and how they pretty much screwed the fans on that finish.
Yeah, I just felt like the whole match was worked around the blood, and then the blood was like the afterthought to the strangulation for a lot of the match and stuff like that. A lot of, you know, again, you talk about a lot of shenanigans getting involved with other wrestlers, coming out, the whole All-Star crew, Eric Royal feeling like the biggest star of the match is just like ridiculous. I mean, it's really not the way things should go there with these two guys. And it just didn't feel like the Battlecade main event. Another weird note that I thought I noticed is it felt like Roy Wilkins' mouthpiece changed colors in the middle of the match from red to black. I don't know if that had anything to do with the blood stipulation or how the blood went about.
Well, it's possible he did one. They did pop out of his mouth at one point, and maybe they put a new one in instead of an older one.
Yeah, it might have been, but I also think that there might have been a switch involved that had something to do with everything that they're doing. And that's the problem.
Very well could have. You probably, that's a good point, yeah.
But that's another problem with the match, and I hate to harken back to it even at all to give it another second of my time, but we talked about the people in the crowd who are too busy picking out the flaws instead of enjoying themselves. But this match, unfortunately, beat you over the head with it to where it's kind of like watching a magician where instead of just enjoying the magic tricks, you're trying to, you can kind of see how they're doing it, so it's so blatantly out in the open that you're kind of instead stopping and staring, trying to figure out the magic trick instead of just enjoying it. And that's what I think was the problem with this finish and with this match as a whole, is it really felt like I was spending more time focusing on trying to figure out what the trick was instead of just enjoying the match. And that just kept happening, essentially, especially with the finish. And it really affected my enjoyment of the match overall. Again, like I said, I think that if this match was on an episode of Worldwide as a setup for more angle, it could work, especially because, you know, Trevor had no friends here. You could argue that, you know, he had his closest friend, his closest partner in history with Andrew Everett was in a match earlier in the night. So maybe he's not up to coming out, especially because his knee was tweaked in the match. He wasn't going to be able to make it out. I didn't hear that story told. But
yeah,
I
you know,
that
normally their commentary would definitely tell us that, or Andrew Everett had a plane to catch, or some shit,
right.
You know?
And then that can build into the angle where it's, can Trevor recruit his friend to come and help him once he's better? Is he able to pull this stuff off? All of these things, you know, that would be great for this was the build into something bigger, especially with, like I said, it's like a lynch mob coming at him, and it's like, I gotta know where that's leading to, because it feels like that should be something, but this should have been the big time blow off. It shouldn't have been the match that feels like it's leading to the next thing, because this is supposed to be the biggest show of the year, and I didn't really get that from this match at all. It did not feel like the Battlecade main event, and I think that's my biggest problem with the match, is that it just didn't feel like it was the main event of the Battlecade. It really did not.
And I thought the build for was I thought the best build was Kane and Nick. Honestly, I thought the best angle really was Attitude and Sterling at the Rumble to set them up, and then even the go home show, they really put a lot of heat on Converse and ECW Anderson. CW Anderson, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on all those points. I mean, that's just it. I don't think you can even argue that that's not kind of how everything shook out, to where this match felt like an afterthought going in, and it kind of delivered on that feeling in the match, because the match came across like it was a, oh shit, we got to deal with this. Well, let's kick the can down the road, because realistically, that's what they did. Trevor got a win that doesn't feel real, because the coach is the one that hit him. It was blood out of the mouth. It wasn't a flowing stream. And then they got all their heat back by jumping him afterwards. So realistically, this was kick the can down the road. I can't believe you couldn't just give Trevor the win. I also can't believe, like I said, you talk about the continuity. The post-match continuity was all about choking him with the ropes, playing off the chokes throughout the match, especially with you know, the coach. I mean, the first thing the coach does when he gets involved in the match is choke Trevor. And the whole time I'm like, why are you bothering to choke this guy out when you got to make him bleed? And then we get this big, hot post-match angle, and no blood. You would think the whole point of them going for the post-match beatdown would be to get that blood and to get Trevor bleeding, and they get nothing out of that. So to me, yeah, this stip hurt the match. The continuity errors, or the lack of continuity in the match hurts it for me. Yeah, it's just, this felt like an afterthought, and it's supposed to be the fucking main event.
The no friends thing is just mind-boggling to me, to tell you the truth. I mean,
I know.
I mean, and, you know, it's funny that, you know, they talk about killing a town, and it's ironic this was pretty much Brad Stutz's last show, maybe, you know, real show, not an RGL show. This was Grant Sawyer's last show. The more, you know, the more we think about it and hearing all the innuendo, then you see the angle with Brad Stutz getting knocked out. It felt like they knew what the fuck they were doing before the company knew what they were going to do going forward before they talked to Brad Stutz, it seems like, huh?
Yeah, it definitely felt that way. It definitely felt like this was, hey, we're not even going to have Stutzy involved with this because he's out of here. We're going to book our own kind of finish and angle for this. Stutzy didn't seem like he was in on it on the commentary.
Well, Trevor, I mean, he's been traditionally booked his own stuff, but I think he run it by here. It just felt like it was like they didn't bounce any of the ideas off of any of the other guys. It felt that, but I'm talking more of the fact that this was Brad Stutz's swan song with them punching him out on an angle called by the coach, which I'm pretty sure was called on the fly. So I thought that was more of a see you later, amigo, type of thing before we fired you. And I'm not justifying what Brad did. So that's kind of feeling like an end of an era. This is Grant Sawyer's. I mean, I mean, my fantasy, he was going to be my new booker. Okay, that's not happening. He's not going to be with the company. Did you look at any of the results from week one, the new companies?
I did not. The only thing I've heard is that the matches are longer now. Overall, they're saying longer matches, but I did not see the results.
Okay, I'm going to run a couple. Do you mind?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. First off, Hurricane is on the show. He goes over Eric Royal for the TV title.
Ah,
that screams to me, and I don't know. This is just pure speculation on my part. Is Hurricane going to be part of the booking, helping him book? I mean, it makes sense of him going over on the TV title and allows him to go work with the whole roster and see if you're going to be the booker, see what they're made of. So, I mean, I think giving him the TV title makes sense in that aspect, for starters. And I think Eric Rowe is way above the TV title anyway. So that doesn't bother me all that much.
I don't like it, honestly. I don't think that he needs to be in the ring with them to see what they have. I mean, if you can't tell by watching, then I don't necessarily know if you're worth your salt as a booker. But yeah,
and this is just my hypothetical. This is me hypothetically speaking. Just the fact that he's on the show, goes over on the TV champ on his first night. I think he's connected with Trevor. I know him and Trevor from TNA and the Carolina Boys. So if you're bringing him in, and he's a big name, so it's kind of a name that can maybe sway the crowd to your favor. Hey, look, yeah, we got rid of Brad, but man, we're bringing in Shane Helms as a booker. This is all me hypothetically just spinning. This is, he just worked the show. I have no idea if he's the booker or not. I have no idea if he was handing out finishes backstage. I don't know. But I find it interesting. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely. I'll definitely see where it goes. I think it's something that should be, I don't know. I think that should have been used for someone else to get someone else over. I think Eric Royal is a top guy in there, and I think beating him means a lot. So I don't necessarily know that I would have, I mean,
It definitely should have meant something then more.
Yeah,
than
I wouldn't have him Hurricane show up as a one-off and beat him on the first night. And just, it feels wrong to me.
And then we have Roy Williams. I mean, we have Wilkins. I'm sorry, going 23 plus with Cool J.
Why?
I don't know. They went 23. Huh. I'm curious on how it plays out. I'm gonna save judgment before I see the match. But on paper, that terrifies me. And I like Cool J. I think Cool J is a real fun bumper. But I don't know if you can go 23 with him. And I think Wilkins is a damn good worker, but going 23, yeah, interesting.
That to me feels like that's just a middle finger, honestly, to Brad. Like, it feels like intentionally just like going with something because it's the opposite of what Brad Stutz would book, honestly.
I felt Brad and Grant knew the strengths and weaknesses of their roster better than anybody, and they knew when to let somebody go long. Like, Trevor could fill the time. Big Eric Royal could fill the time. But does Cool J really fill that time? I don't know. We'll see. So that kind of scares me on these first steps going forward. But of course, losing Grant, who was the backbone of the audio of putting things together. I mean, look, just not having him this year. What did we get last year at Battlecade? At the end of Battlecade?
Yeah, it's the pictures of 2017. We're not seeing it this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Are we going to get it now that Grant's out of the picture?
I don't know. I mean, it's been a tradition. It's kind of sad if it's not coming.
Yeah. I mean, just right then and there. I mean, that says a lot. I mean, those are just some of the things. I mean, and not having Grant involved in that type of stuff. I mean, are we going to get those, like, really neat little gimmick shows anymore?
Right. A lot of that. I mean, that was Brad and Chad. Or that was Brad and Garrett's thing. I mean, Grant's thing, really. I mean.
Yeah, that was their thing. I mean, not every time it hit. Most of the time it did.
But it was always a nice refresh, even if it wasn't necessarily the best.
Yeah, and they picked the right times to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm just a little nervous going forward. We're still reviewing this company. I'm hoping for good things. I believe in that roster. But you know what? I mean, since we brought up Hurricane, he was on a roster, on a great roster, that went out of business in WCW. You can be on a great roster and go out of business. You need creative behind you. I'm just hoping. It's just the ending of Battle K just left a bad taste in my mouth, and then hearing Grant's not being able to be involved with the product that him and Brad have been synonymous with, along with the roster. Don't get me wrong, it's a group team freaking dynamic that does it, but you take key opponents into something. And he got into it. To get me in 2017, get this Pete Schumacher guy to stop watching his Mid-Atlantic or his Houston or his World Class to dedicate an hour a week to this current program, because I really enjoy the booking, I enjoy the talent, I enjoy the announcing, and they rip apart two-thirds of that. Terrifies me. I'm hearing they're going with C. Cecil as a lead announcer, and I think he'll do good at it once he gets going. I thought he was the best announcer during Scenic City, but right now I hear they're doing a rotating cast of color with him. I think that's bad. I mean, I think Cecil does his best stuff being consistent and forming a chemistry and stuff, and I think announcing will be hurt by it's one thing to do it differently here and there, but we had Brad and Cecil that was the team, okay? And then you throw in CL here and there, and she did great, and Kane, I enjoyed Kane when he do it, but it shouldn't be Cecil and guest commentator of the week. I think that's doomed for failure. Maybe they're trying people out, I don't know. But I think you better make a damn decision quickly, because that was another thing that was so great about CWF was the commentary team. So they need to get that solved. I mean, obviously Cecil in the lead chair, I think he'll do fine. He'll grow into it, but you got to get him partners that he can play off of and form. Most importantly, form. It doesn't need to be him and Brad redo. It just needs to be they just need to have a chemistry together. What do you think about the commentary thing?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that it's a bad move to do a rotating cast, even if I understand the idea that you're trying to try out different people. Totally get that. But I find that the rotating cast, especially at a time like right now, is going to feel like too much tumult. I think you want their commentary team to feel like they're the steadying kind of rudder for the ship. And when you're doing a rotating cast, you're just not going to have that there. When you're switching so many other things, it's going to really, really affect the quality of the product, I think. I agree with you that I think Grant is going to do, Cecil is going to do a great job as the lead guy now. I definitely believe in his ability to do that. But I think that it's really showing a lot of promotions now. A lot of the smaller indie promotions do this rotating, grab somebody who's not wrestling at the time, one of the guys who's on the show, have them fill in. And I don't think that any company that does that has a super solid commentary on any of their matches, because they're constantly rotating people around. And I think that if you don't have a solid tandem of two people who get each other, you're not going to have that same camaraderie that breeds a really good duo. And I think that that comes from knowing each other and knowing that you're going to continue to do match after match and the entire shows together. So I just hope that they can get past this tryout thing quickly. And I hope it's not the idea to rotate it as the full-time thing, honestly, because that would be just death for this. Honestly, if I'm being perfectly honest, I think that would be a terrible idea.
Now, the final thing I want to talk about on CWF is, or two things, like, you know, everyone, the rumors on Brad, he propositioned a female employee. I just want to point out that it's not just on-air talent that's there. I mean, there's people who work tickets, concession, who clean up. So when you're thinking about who he was propositioned, just think there's a lot more options than the obvious one or two that come to mind and stuff. But finally, I would like to talk about Johnny P's video package or War and Peace video package. I mean, it was incredible. The only thing I could be critical of it was that it went long. But because of the scope and the magnitude of the feud, I felt it needed to be long. It was incredible. And if you, I mean, it's like, honestly, it's one of my favorite pieces I've ever seen of a feud. I mean, it made it seem like this feud was incredible on everything they transpired up to fucking Battlecade. And Johnny P did an incredible job covering it on the video package that they dropped a couple days ago. Did you have a chance to see it?
Yeah. And I'm with you. Great stuff. Johnny P, always super impressive with his ability to put this stuff together. He's got good, you know, you won't lie, he's got really good source material that he's working with. But, I mean, he makes the most out of it and really tells a huge story. Even just with the small things, then with the big things, obviously the kind of full storytelling stuff that he's done with the documentaries. But what's really impressed, because I loved Barbed Wire City, and I know that he's a good documentarian. But what I've really impressed with in the CWF stuff, and maybe it's just my own ignorance, is that I felt he did a really good job with all the smaller history pieces as well, putting a lot of emotion and a lot of storytelling, even in, you know, little 5-minute video clips here and there. So really impressive, great stuff from Johnny. Got to give him a lot of credit for that, for everything that he's doing, honestly, with the company. I really hope that that's not something that's also in flux. I hope that that sticks around going forward. But we'll see, you know, because I know, we both know. I mean, this is not, I don't think this is telling stories out of class or whatever. I mean, everyone, I think, knows that Johnny P's relationship to CWF was kind of through Brad and Grant. I mean, those were his friends. Those were his close friends. I know he has other friends in CWF as well, especially now that he's gone to a few shows. He's even friends with fans and everything. But you wonder if some of that access and some of that whole kind of camaraderie is not quite there if there's a new regime in charge of the company. And I would really hope that whoever's involved now would not be as short-sighted to not realize that what he's been adding to the show actually helps them a lot more than it hurts them, you know, and maybe not be, hopefully nobody is being kind of selfish about things and kind of wanting to be a gatekeeper and protecting, thinking that they're protecting CWF from the outside world, because rising tide lifts all ships. And I think that anyone there should be happy for CWF to grow in its fan base and not necessarily, you know, upset that it's changing and more people care about it and are paying attention. You know what I mean? And I think that Johnny's stuff really does help bring more eyes onto this company.
Yeah, so if anyone's out there who hasn't seen it, check it out. Yeah, it runs like over an hour, but it's worth your time, folks. It adds a lot to the feud. Overall about Battlecade, I mean, I still give it an easy thumbs up because, I mean, it was top to bottom an incredible show. Really, I mean, nothing really stunk. A lot of good action. And my favorite match, though, was Chet Sterling and the Brad Attitude. What about you, Tim?
Yeah, I would probably say the same, but just to be different and just so that we can have two different kind of recommendations, I would go with Eric Royal versus Drew Adler here. I like that match quite a bit.
Fair enough. On that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll be talking some NXT.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Play Simulations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStimation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaySimulation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySimulation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySimulation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. And we're back with some NXT action. And, man, it opens up hot and heavy. We have one of our favorite tag teams, Heavy Machinery, taking on Sabatelli and Moss. You know what? I thought this was a fun bout. The heels go over. I was like, ah. But wrestling needs more fun acts. And I mean fun as in laughing with you, not at you, or not over choreographed shit like Joey Ryan, penis touching. I mean fun acts that can appeal to the kids and stuff. And I think Heavy Machinery can do that. And they can also kick ass. So what are your thoughts on Heavy Machinery in this match?
Oh, you know I love Heavy Machinery. Those are my boys. I thought that they were great here. I thought that lately Tucker has been Dozovich has been kind of the star of the act, but I thought that right here, Tucker Knight, who was a guy who I was actually bullish on even before he was kind of a name in NXT, when he was just an underneath guy, I was bullish on him. Good size. He's gotten bigger, honestly, over the couple of years. I mean, you know, all around bigger. I'm not saying he's got definition, but his look works for him. But he could still move and he could still go, and he was killing it here. He looked really good, really bringing that high-octane offense. Moss and Sabatelli really don't get any heat in this match like they normally work. They have been starting to work a decent heat segment in matches, but they don't really do any here. It's mostly all just heavies. Then the heavies get fucked out of a win. I thought it was really good. It's a good way to get heat on the team, you know, without them actually working a long heat segment, is they were getting just swamped, and then they come out of nowhere and kind of steal the win. I think that's old school wrestling heat, right? Your guy, undeserving team, gets the win. The deserving team gets screwed. You still like them because you know that they're better. And I agree with you. I think that the Heavy Machinery is an act that can get over with kids, can get over with fans like me and you. Old school fans, new school fans, everybody can get into it. I even think, even the stupid kind of marquee people who are into Rusev Day and all the stupid stuff like that, that's like whatever meme is popular to pretend is the best part of Raw every week. I think Heavy Machineries can fall into that role at all. Honestly, they have appeal for every segment of your fan base. So I totally agree with you that they should be a predominant act. And I just don't know what's holding them back, theoretically, because it seems like they're not being used to their full potential at all yet. But, you know, it's NXT, so everyone kind of gets their turn sometimes. So hopefully they get their turn very shortly.
Cool. Then we get an Undisputed Era promo. I don't know, man. These guys are just not getting over for me, man. And I liked them in the Ring of Honor. And here, I just... Adam Cole, I think, sinking this damn trio. What are your thoughts here?
I think it's partially Adam Cole. I think it's partially the setup. I've talked about it. They come across like they're doing this kind of knockoff NWO thing. I don't find that helps them get over at all. I think that I think they need to just kind of focus on them being a unique act. I feel like the music playing in the background a lot of times as well is kind of part of that. That it kind of comes across like this NWO knockoff thing. I'm just not into it. I'm with you. And they are guys that I was into for a long time. And now they just feel like kind of they're just there running in place.
Yeah, maybe they're just being overproduced. Then we get this really cool Adam Cole and Aleister Black video package prompting, you know, getting us geared up for their match. I thought this was fun. What about you?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, there's nothing, not too much to kind of add to what you said there.
And then we got Roddy Strong versus Fabian Aichner. What were your thoughts here?
Great action from this. I was actually kind of hoping for Aichner to get a little bit kind of a better showing here. But I thought that he still looked good either way. I thought that Roddy really brought it. It seemed like that kind of the point was to kind of put some more steam on Roddy, after kind of losing a lot of matches. It was a good way to put heat back on him, I thought, but I was hoping for more of a match with a little bit more back and forth. I did like kind of getting the win with the Stronghold, kind of re-establishing that as possibly a future finisher going forward for him. And I thought that the post-match promo was really good stuff, and again is showing that like this NXT Roddy Strong is totally different animal from the ROH Roderick Strong, and he's a guy that I hope continues to get pushed moving forward and starts to become kind of more than just a mid-card role-playing guy.
Yeah, I thought Strong looked good here. Then he's getting Lars Sullivan. I'm like excited about that, but then I'm like, well, they're just using Roddy as fodder. He's gonna put over Lars. So it's like, it just feels like Roddy Strong feels like he deserves better than just putting over people, and that's kind of what he's here now. He's Ring of Honor Roddy in NXT clothing. What are your thoughts about him and Lars at TakeOver?
I'm worried about that, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's officially announced, so I actually am still part of the kind of, I think, Lars and Dane truther people. I think that this match, that the match at TakeOver is still going to end up being Lars and Killian Dane, probably, and that the Roddy match will end up being maybe on TV or something like that beforehand.
Okay. Then we get TM61 doing a personality piece. Who fucking cares? I mean, I think they need to reintroduce them since they've been off our TV for so long. But afterwards, it's like, who fucking cares? What were your thoughts?
I actually kind of liked the beginning stuff with the outtakes and all that. I thought that it reminded me, I don't know if you remember this, but when Balor was doing the personality pieces and they showed him like, I like to play Legos and all this stupid shit. It felt kind of like that, but it felt like these are the guys to put that on. More like a personality piece like that where they're a little bit goofy, but a little bit charming. I thought that did a good job. I get what you're saying because there's no established, they haven't established anything with these guys here. So it feels like you're just, you know, doing nothing with nothings. Like you're not really putting anything onto people that matter. And then the kind of the other stuff that they showed, I thought was fine, but yeah, I think that this was a good personality piece for them and could help to start get people invested in them. So I think it was a good step in the right direction. Now, I don't think that now they're going to be like the top tag team in the company moving forward, but I do think that it was a good step in the right direction for them.
Alrighty. And then we get Aaliyah versus Lacey Evans, which is really just more of a backdrop for Shayna Baszler to come out and beat the crap out of Aaliyah after Evans starts being braggadocious, but she powders. And then Ember Moon comes in for the save. You know, that was a pretty interesting segment because I thought they were going one way and they ended up going a different direction with Baszler coming out. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was really interesting. The Aaliyah Lacey stuff felt like, yeah, like it was a red herring kind of thrown out there that felt like that was a weird thing to do, something that felt so different and like and new and taking characters in a different direction just to have it kind of end up swerving back to just being Shayna and Moon kind of set up. So Yeah, very interesting way to do things, and actually kind of smart in that, like, maybe you kind of are starting to tease moving forward with something with Aaliyah and Lacey Evans here.
All right. And then we get Regal with Zelina Vega, and I enjoyed this. You can tell Zelina Vega's coming around, being able to stand up to Regal and be in the scene with Regal. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, Regal is a great guy in these backstage segments, really great in every role that he's ever played in wrestling. So she stands up right next to him and doesn't feel out of place at all. And I'm, again, always just continue to be very impressed with her because she was just nothing when I first started seeing her, but she's developed into a really, really top flight character.
Yep. And then we get a No Way Jose sighting. He'll be back in 2018. I like No Way Jose. I like him. I like his energy. I like what he brings to the show. And I do miss him on the shows. What about you?
Yeah, I was a big No Way Jose fan, have been the whole time. Really missed getting his memorial, This Weekend Wrestling WWE edition memorial Johnny Sorrow, big guy that can dance and have fun takes every week. So it'll be nice to get back in the flow of talking about that here pretty shortly.
Right, and then we get a Gargano interview. This didn't do anything for me, honestly. It was a little too babyface-ish. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why he's not Johnny Promo, right? He's not known for necessarily his promo work. He's always been an in-ring guy. But, I mean, people are into him, and it works. So I honestly think, I mean, this is not a fair comparison because I actually think that he was a better talker than even Johnny is right now. But I mean, he could almost fit a Steamboat role where, like, he does most of his talking as a babyface in the ring and he doesn't necessarily need to be on the mic very much and kind of does that whole thing. So I could definitely see, you know, people are into him, so let's just, like, kind of focus on that, and not every babyface needs to be able to cut, you know, a 20-minute promo.
Fair enough. And then we get the Authors of Pain, and they get to punish the Street Profits. It felt like that this was a message that the Authors of Pain aren't going anywhere, and I liked it because I think the Street Profits kind of got exposed here. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I like that the Street Profits are kind of getting hopefully kind of shown to be the flash in the pan that they are, all hype with no substance, and then maybe, just maybe, this can be a stumbling block that sets them back, and then they can come back and have a little bit more oomph to their whole in-ring personas and be more than just Instagram filters and Snapchat stories and all this, and actually be a tag team that has some, like, solid wrestling stuff. Again, I've talked about it before, but I mean, I think both guys have collegiate sport backgrounds. I could definitely see, like, an updated Steiner Brothers or Varsity Club kind of gimmick on these guys, at least in-ring. I'm not saying they have to drop the personalities outside in the segments. I'd like to see that more fully developed, but I want to see some cohesion in the ring. I want to see these guys are athletes. This is why I should care about them when it comes to wrestling. This is why they're contenders. And up till now, we haven't seen that at all. And I think it was actually really smart booking. I don't know if they deserve the credit for it because this could be meta-narrative that I'm making up, but I think whoever put this together was actually really smart in that they realized that and that they're kind of going like, okay, let's tone this back. And actually, in some ways, show the fans that are all hyped on these guys, like, they're not quite there. Like, we get that you like them, but they're not top-level guys in-ring yet. And that's why they just get completely smashed by AOP, and they don't really stand up to them like other tag teams have in the past, because they don't have that substance in the ring yet. And sure, they're fun, but they're not great wrestlers yet. And that's kind of, hopefully, a story that you can teach to these fans so maybe they can actually get invested in them in the future when they kind of do resiliently fight back and actually become something more than just like a fun 2-second clip on Vine.
Yep. I'll have to say I enjoyed the show. I felt that they're building towards the special really well, fleshing out the card. What about you, man?
Yeah, I think that the card is getting exciting for me. It's finally an NXT show that I'm really kind of getting into. I love that they kind of lucked in. It almost feels like they lucked into this, what with the Drew injury and the way things kind of panned out with whatever happened with Dream. But Gargano, Almas, I mean, by just the the fact that they were both kind of toiling around in the midsection of the cards, having a little kind of nothing feud, has now led to them both being against each other for the title. It makes that match feel like it has more history and it's much more important. And like I said, I don't know if this was the plan all along or they lucked into it, but it definitely creates a more exciting kind of situation for the title match than what we've had recently.
Okay, awesome. Why don't we take a break here? And when we come back, we'll finish up with Freelance and PWX.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back, and we're looking at the Freelance show from Powerbomb TV, Freelance Stained Glass Ceiling, and we open up with an 8-man scramble. What were your thoughts here?
For the scramble, I thought it was okay for a kind of spotty match. There's a lot of stuff that felt way too choreographed. A lot of guys who clearly were just looking for their spots to pop in and hit their kind of moves. I did like Space Monkey. He did a good job of, like, he's slowly getting up onto the apron while selling. He was one of the only ones who I noticed kind of put in that effort into trying to make it seem like he was even in a fight and not just, like, trying to hit his cues. But then he ends up winning with a fucking tail whip, which is just such a stupid thing. And then he gets rained down on bananas for his win. I mean, there's action. I thought Airwolf looked okay here, but I think he'd be a lot better in a just a straight-up match. I'd like to see him working against someone with some psychology in the match. I felt like they had the big guy with Cousin Gator who could have been used for some story, but he really wasn't. I gave this a 1.5 stars. I was not really impressed with this at all, honestly.
Yeah, I was with you. I'm with you. I thought there was some convoluted stuff. Some fun stuff, and then you'd go to fun stuff, to eye-rolling stuff. Everyone worked hard, though, and it was full of action, but yeah, it just really wasn't like, you know. Then we get Mike Dell versus Toby Durst. I thought this was solid work. Dell focusing on the arm, good solid heat. I thought during the heat segment it got a little bit boring, though. Solid work, but nothing extraordinary. What about you? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I thought Dell working kind of roughneck heel, going on the arm was good, on Kobe. I thought that Kobe needed a little bit more fire from underneath, especially in the start. He was really just kind of taking a lot of punishment. Dell's real bare bones worker. He's not going to make anybody's top lists, but he's good for what he is. He's not going to be on GIFs. You know, you're not seeing Hoke making a bunch of GIFs of Mike Dell matches. But he's a good spot filler. Colby's comeback is, it's not as muy caliente as I would like. And he eventually gets the win with like a variation of the Ticket to Ride kind of move. I gave the match 2.25. I thought that it was good for what it was. I thought Dell was very proficient. I thought Kobe had some spots in some places where he looked good, but he needs to turn it up. He needs to turn up the heat overall quite a bit.
And then we get Anthony Henry versus Jake Parnell, man. What were you thinking here?
Good, like, heavy spot fest bomb action from the guys. Really just going to town on each other. I like a lot of nutty spots on the floor. They barely get in the ring at all. And then once they finally do, they pretty much finish it off there. I really loved the finish, honestly, with Anthony Henry locking in the half grab and then just hammer fisting Parnell in the back of the head over and over again until he taps out. That said, I gave the match 3 stars. It was supposed to be a nutty kind of fight between two guys who are just down to go in there and bang. I definitely pick stuff like this apart sometimes for saying like I would like a lot more focus and maybe some more psychology, but I mean there are MMA fights that look like this, you know, like an MMA version of this rather than kind of pro wrestling. So it's like there is a psychology to it. It's just maybe not a psychology that I'm necessarily a big fan of. That said, both these guys were really good at this. Parnell, I've primarily only seen in the Viking War Party, but I liked him a lot more here than I have liked him ever before. Solid good action and definitely a standout on this card overall, honestly, just to kind of give a little bit of a spoiler alert moving forward on this show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.5. I liked everything you were talking about, and I felt like they could have done it with a little bit more time, but I'll tell you, the one thing that I noticed with Henry, he's feeling more like a top guy now, where I think he's embracing his heel being a heel, and I think he's understanding that that's his bread and butter, and I think he's going to embrace it this year, so we'll see. And then Henry calls out Stevie Fierce. Then we get Unfortunate Partners versus Awkward Teen, Aqua Force. This feels a little indie to me. It had its highs and lows, but I don't know. I give it 2.25. Yeah, stuff moments I liked, and there's moments I just hated. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I gave it 2.5. Unfortunate Pairing, I thought was pretty, they're pretty good as heels. I liked the chicanery that they were pulling, especially with Ray, kind of working down, like kind of being condescending down to her. I liked Ray better in this setting than I did in Reality of Wrestling. In an adult setting, I can get into her character a little bit more. When she's playing towards children, I just didn't get it because I felt like there was a major disconnect between fun-loving, child-friendly babyface to the kind of in-ring action. But here I think it works as she's more of the kind of nostalgia, 90 kids, only 90s kids will get this character playing towards drunk, you know, 20 to 30 somethings in the crowd. Then the breakup angle at the end was probably for the best because I don't think that GPA is best suited tagging with Kylie Rae moving forward. I gave the match 2.5 stars, so I think we're both pretty solidly in the same kind of range of feeling for this match.
Yeah, then we get Darren Corbin comes out and recreates the CM Punk interview. Come on, man. Drop it. Dumb, lame, unimaginative. I can still go all day. What about you? What were you thinking?
Yeah,
but what he did was good, but the execute, but the whole couple of mimicking of it was just dumb.
Yeah, I agree. The promo itself is fine, but when you're couching it in the, oh, it's shoot time, I'm going to sit down and talk, and it's just like, yeah, no thank you with that.
What do you think of 4-Star Heroes versus Guns and Beer?
Guns and Beer, I thought, did a pretty good job selling, like, kind of filling their roles. 4-Star Heroes are obviously very, very over. I thought that there was some sloppiness throughout the match. I thought that there was times where the crowd was just completely dead, and you would expect the crowd to be super, super into four-star heroes, but they're really not. Even towards the end, when the crowd really does start to get behind them somewhat, they're deader than you would expect. Again, like I said, there's lots of like sloppiness. The Guns and Beer could probably be okay if they were just trying to tone it down and just have like a Southern indie kind of heel tag team. I think they could probably pull that off a lot better than they could do trying to do some of the stuff that they were doing here. The one guy should have definitely not tried to powerbomb Big C. That was a bad move. I gave this match 1 star. I was very underwhelmed and I did not enjoy it at all. When you have a babyface heroes tag team, like 4 star, I really think that it's just, I hate to say it because it's like not completely on them, but I think that when you have like your local indie babyface hero kind of tag team, it's like a really, really cardinal sin for them to essentially have the crowd be dead for most of their match. Because I mean, that's like, you know, 75% of this act is supposed to be that the locals love them. And if the locals are not acting like they give a shit, then what's the point?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you completely on the match. It left me pretty cold. Then we got Ethan Page versus Eric Kanyon. I thought this was solid. About 2.25 I gave it. I thought Kanyon did some fun stuff with the mat work. Page focusing on the back was good. And I like Paige's punches, but they just didn't have enough in there to have a really good match. It was fine for what it was, but underwhelming would be the term I'd use to describe it. What about you, Timothy?
I mean, it was simultaneously a mix to me of underwhelming and overwhelming, I guess, in that I don't expect much out of Ethan Page in ring, and I thought that Eric Kanyon did a really good job of bringing out some of the better stuff from Page here in ring wise. I thought that there was some good back and forth there. I thought that there was a little bit too much playing around with the ref. I liked the start, Page saying, you know, 3 times booking rate because there's glass in the match, so it's a death match. I thought that was fine, you know, stuff like that, but. Yeah, I thought that there was some good hot stretch towards the end, big spots back and forth. But then Kanyon, after everything was done, Kanyon kicks the rope into Ego's nuts when he's going for the RK Ego. Goes for the glimmering warlock, gets that. Page kicks out. Page gets the win with the spinning Dwayne. I gave it 2.5. And then Page, of course, has to grab the mic even post-match again. It's just, it does start to kind of drain on you with how much Ethan Page is just on the mic constantly cutting promos that have like varying success of being like worthwhile, and just overall he kind of starts to wear thin on me pretty quickly, honestly, at this point.
Yep. And then we got Darren Corbin versus Gary J. What do you think of this match?
Great action, hard hitting. I liked Gary J. Pretty good selling, honestly, here with the attacks on his arms. I thought he did a really good job of selling that. Big strikes. Corbin willing to do anything to win was actually really good for him as a, you know, you want to believe these kind of mid-level, not even mid-level, but lower indie level kind of top guys, star guys, that like, you know, that's a good version of that character to believe in, that like, you know, Gary J, he's not necessarily a huge name, but I think he's a lot more kind of internationally recognizable than Darren Corbin at this point. So for me to buy into Darren Corbin as being able to beat him, being that he's a little bit more reckless, I think works, and a little bit more kind of at the end of his leash is kind of a good way for him to work. You know, hitting the cutter on the floor, I thought is a good move for him. This really felt like it was a toned down version of the Henry versus Parnell match from earlier. Better storytelling with the arm work, I thought. A little bit better selling from Gary J overall. So I gave this 3.5. Because to me, like I said, I think just a more solid, better version of the same kind of bomb fest, back and forth, crazy move match.
Yeah, I gave it 3.25. I like Gary was looking good real early on. He hits the corner bump, takes that corner bump, and Corbin's on the arm. I like that. Jay selling it really well. Jay misses a tope and dings the arm. And then, you know, everything that they did made sense. They told the story. That's what they needed to do. And I really enjoyed it because of that. And then, man, I love the main event of Bucky Collins versus Isaiah Velasquez. Velasquez made his name feuding with Ali from 205 Live. At Mustafa Ali, they had a great series of matches. And I've never seen Bucky Collins, but I really liked him. He doesn't look like a top guy, though. But he looked like a low-red version of Rip Rogers, but he was good. I liked Velasquez is on fire to start. Collins is bumping big for him. Like, that's where I'm comparing him to Rogers. Like, just a great bumper. Collins shotguns knees. And shotgun knees Velasquez into the guardrail. It's just nasty. The main thing is this comes across as really hate-filled. I like Bucky working the neck. Everything, they told a really good story. Everything looked hurty. Velasquez looked like a great baby face. Collins looked like that third cousin, fifth time removed from your family tree who you don't invite over because he's like dealing meth to the kids in the barn. Look to him, just a real skeezy vibe, but the guy could work. And they those guys have places on the indies in 2018. I gave it 4 stars. I absolutely love this match. What about you?
Yeah, I actually also really, really enjoyed this. I'm pretty much solidly in the camp of everything you said there. I thought that they had a great mix of spots and moves that you need to have in modern wrestling while also sticking to a really great story and big-time emotion. Isaias Velasquez coming back as the conquering babyface after pretty much the last time that I was a big fan of his in freelance. He was a real solid heel. I thought he was great here. Crowd loves him. Bucky all over the neck. Commentary makes it feel even more important, talking about just how... I mean, I did not like this commentary throughout the show. We've barely talked about it, but I do not like this commentary. But I thought that even with a lot of the same issues, they did a good job getting over the importance of this match. I mean, talking about, you know, just how serious the injury to the neck to Velasquez was. Bucky's real piece of shit for going after it. Really nasty spots. Stuff like the slingshot into the guardrail. Big bumps onto the shoulders and neck over and over again. I thought that there was a point here where I was fixing to get upset. Isaias Velasquez seems to be taking the match back over with just a lariat that feels too easy, but Bucky cuts him off solidly, which I was really impressed with. Bucky's super vicious, jockeying for position back and forth, I thought was really good throughout. Bucky hitting the Hammer of Dawn for a false finish was amazing. I'm not someone who really gives a lot of credit on big false finishes, but I thought that one was fantastic. With the drama built around the neck and such a nasty neck kind of focused move, I was just super, super impressed. I loved the finish. Super great. Could have probably done without the commentator using the N-word, but whatever. That's a, you know, that's fine, I guess. 3¾ star for me. Really, really good match. Enjoyed it, you know, all around. And even with Isaias, like I talked about, he's really shitty heel when he was a heel. So even him using a low blow kick to set up his finish, I thought that was still fine because... he was just at his wit's end, and he still got a little bit of that hard edge as a heel, so I can still get into that as the finish for the match.
Yeah, overall, I give the show a thumbs in the middle with a thumbs up. There's good enough wrestling on the show to give it a thumbs up, but there was some garbage on the show. So, I mean, I wouldn't seek out the whole show. I think you can cherry pick the three matches we would recommend, which is the top two matches and the Anthony Henry match, and you'd be fine, you know?
Yeah, this is a 100% cherry pick show. But I would say you're doing yourself a disservice with not going and checking out that main event, because I think we both really, really enjoyed it. And yeah, I think that it's a... I mean, I've seen Bucky Collins a little bit here and there, especially AAW with the hooligans. But I've never seen... I didn't really ever see this side of him before, and I really appreciated it. So might be a guy that I look out for when he's in big match settings going forward here.
Yeah, but now let's look at PWX Night 1. I don't want to. Let's try to do this shortly, because I really don't want to go match by match. I thought this was a very boring show. There was nothing bad per se on it per se, but I thought the workers were really similar. Like if you look at Scenic City, all those matches kind of had purpose and they were versatile workers. Here it felt like. Let me see. I think I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 matches, I guess. I think they all range from a star and 3/4, and I got 1 at 3.5 stars. No, there's 8 of 8 matches, and they're all like in the 2.5 star range, except for the Darius Lockhart versus Myron Reed match, which was the only match that felt different on the whole entire show. Everything felt the same to me in the tournament. What were you thinking about the tournament? Did it all feel kind of samey to you? Or
very, very similar stuff. I honestly, this feels like the perfect time to break this out. This, for being a Southern indie, this felt like Bola from 4 years ago, where every match was exactly the same. Every wrestler was working the same style, kind of like, I'm like 2.75, 3 star. Like I'm in that range for pretty much everything. At the high end, it's 3.5. For me, the high end is 3.25 for Darius Lockhart, Myron Reed. I think we both agree that that was the best tournament match. I think bringing up the runner up is the Skyler versus Robinson, which meanwhile still felt the same as almost every other match. It was just kind of the better version of that same kind of match. So yeah, I'm very much with you. And then for me, the main event, I thought it was fine, but it was a little, I don't know, indie ladder matches don't work for me. And I think that you might as well just save that stuff for WWE, honestly, and just do other kinds of stipulation matches on the indies. If you want to get crazy, that's fine, but don't necessarily make it like a TLC ladder match or whatever. I'm pretty much there with you. A lot of samey stuff, a lot of middling stuff. And, I mean, yeah, Myron Reed, Darius Lockhart, I thought that they had a great match here, honestly. Really impressive from both guys. I thought that Lockhart did a good job of kind of grounding the lucha style. I thought his punches looked good. Yeah, so like for me, that was like the match of the show to seek out, with the second best being the Skylar Juice, like I said.
Yeah, that was the match that stood out to me, is the Myron Reed Darius Lockhart match. And I'm with you on the main event. I felt it was overkill. I felt they went too long. I felt because they had the crowd blackened out. I don't know why. Maybe because they didn't draw well. I don't know. But anything that happened in the audience, you couldn't see. And when it was a spectacle like the main event, that hurt the main event. And it fell flat because of that. They went long and they lost the crowd. And this show needed a different... needed more disciplined booking, honestly. It felt like they let the guys do their 15-minute everything's the same. They didn't have enough flavor in the tournament. Everyone was like, you know, very similar. And the only guys who stood out was was Reed and Lockhart, and it's because they worked a completely different style than the rest of the crew. I was really disappointed in night one. It felt like a flat show.
I even enjoyed Star and White Mike, but it's kind of impressive because, like, when you say that, like, White Mike felt like he was just another guy on the show working the same kind of match still, even with, like, a little bit of, like, humor and stuff in the beginning. Once the match started, it did, like, just turn into another one of the same matches that all the other matches were. You know what I mean? And it was just kind of interesting when you talk about that, just how true it was. But another thing, too, that was a standout was, like, Elijah Evans versus Sugar Dunkerton. It was kind of like, I felt like White Mike was kind of into that. He got normalized, and then I felt like so did Elijah Evans, but they kind of met in the middle where I was like, I liked White Mike less than I normally do, and I liked Elijah Evans more than I normally do because they were all just kind of doing the same middle-of-the-road level matches.
All right, man. What do you anything you got to plug, bud?
Same old, same old. Got an interview coming out pretty soon with Kevin Hare from Burning Spirits on Lucha Undead, so look forward to that. Recent episode of The Top Beer just came out. That should have a special something coming out here soon. I don't want to give it away until it's for sure what's going on, but we've got some new stuff coming down the pike. But yeah, just to find out about everything, follow me on Twitter at Lucha.
Yeah, follow me at Titans of Wrestling and WorldCast Wednesday. Have a great week, guys. Later.